Hello, thanks for coming. So what I'll be talking about is a way, is somehow an extension of Landauer's principle to a quantum mechanical case. It's in the interface between quantum information and thermodynamics. So our main question is, what does it take to erase the data stored in the system? So the problem is we have the system and we want to erase it, for instance, formatting a hard drive. So what we mean by erasing a system is that we have a system S and we want to take it to a pure state, predefined pure state. So if you have a hard drive, you want to put it all in zeros. You lose all the data you had there, but on the other hand, if you didn't know the state of the of that hard drive before, now you know that it's all in zeros. So it's like reset and you can use it to wherever you want. So this is taking and what it takes, in this case, what we mean is how much energy do we have to put in order to raise a system, or how much work we have to perform. So this is. How much work? Like Landauer's principle puts it. And what we will see is that it depends on the information we have about the system. So it will depend somehow in the, it will depend on the observer. So what does it take a given observer to erase a system? Very well. So first step is to quantify the information that an observer can have about the system, because we'll use this information later to raise the system. So one, information about the system. And now it is a trivial observation that different observers can have different information about the same system. For instance, you're going to consider a system formed by n qubits. And that is generate, which means that all states have the same energy. And we have two observers. First is called Alice. And Alice prepares the system in a pure state. Okay, so she knows she prepares the system. System is called S in a pure state. Say state one, for instance. Okay. So let me introduce you to some notation. These are all the possible states of the system, and the filling of each circle is the probability that the system is in that state. So in this case, she knows that the system is in zero. This is state one, etc. She knows that the system is in this state. Okay? But you can have another observer called Bob, who doesn't know what Alice is. So he knows that she prepared the system in one state, but doesn't know what state that is. So he doesn't know anything about the state of the system. He sees the system in like a mixed state, fully mixed state. So for him, the system is in this state, which means that the probability of finding it in any of these states is 1 over n. So it sees like OS 1 over n, then 1 over n, etc. Now, how do we quantify the information that these observers have about the systems? One way of doing this is using entropy measures, right? That quantify not how much they know, but how much they don't know, the uncertainty they have about the system. And the most famous one is von Neumann entropy that is given by this, where rho is the set of system S. So in these two cases, case of Alice, she sees a pure state. She has entropy 0. It's entropy of S for Alice. In this case, Bob sees a fully mixed state, and this entropy is maximal, n because we have n qubits. Okay. Now, all these observers are classical. Yes?
Do you have n qubits or n states?
N qubits.
So then shouldn't that be 2dn?
Yes, it should. Sorry. So now, all these observers are classical in the sense that they have to store their information about the system in some device, and this device can be classical. They have a memory that is classical. For instance, Helis. We can represent the state of L of system S plus the memory, this is S. And then the memory is just a piece of paper that says it's in state 1. The same way here, in the case of Bob, the joint state of system and Bob is a fully mixed state. Times a piece of paper that says, I don't know. Okay. Times means tensor. But you can have another kind of observer. You can have an observer that has a quantum memory that is entangled with the system. So, there's a third observer called Quasimodo. Let me draw it for you. This is S, all the n qubits, and this memory is made by another n qubits that are entangled with this. Okay. So the joint state of S and this memory is a pure state that is maximally entangled, so that the reduced states of just the system or just the memory are fully mixed. And how do we measure the entropy of Quasimodo or the uncertainty of Quasimodo about the system? For this, we need quantum conditional entropies, which, in the case of a Neumann entropy, are defined as the entropy of the joint state minus the entropy of the memory. So this is a pure state, this is 0. This is n because it's fully mixed. So its entropy is negative. Okay, we have an uncertainty negative. And this can only happen with quantum observers. And this uncertainty, these negative conditional entropies, have some well-defined meaning in information theory. For instance, in quantum merging, they quantify the entanglement that one agent has sent to another. Or in the case of the uncertainty principle, they quantify violations of the uncertainty principle. And now what we will do in our place is to find in our work is to find a thermodynamic meaning for these entropies, for these negative entropies. Okay? So, now we're going. To see what these observers can do to erase the system, and for that we have to allow them to do some things. So we allow them. To manipulate system S in their memories. In a way that we will see. The first thing that they can do is that they can apply reversible operations on the system. So they want to erase, so they can perform some operations there, okay? Apply. So in our case, what Alice can do to erase the system is just to perform a unitary that swaps these two states. So if it was only one qubit, this would be a NOT gate that would take 1 to 0. Okay? So she does this and ends up unique this. It's like the energy, she didn't spend any energy to this operation because the both states have the same energy. So, the work to erase the system by Alice was here. Now, Bob.
Sorry.
Yes?
Erasing
the system because I took it, I took the system to the pure state 0. No. There's 2 qubits, 4 states.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew that it was in this state. And we take it to state 0. Because she knew that the system was in this state. Yes.
So what exactly is the definition of erasure then?
Information of zeros and ones. No, exactly. It erases the state system to a pure state. To the pure state 0.
Yeah,
so like the predefinite.
Takes system to a pure state 0.
Yes.
Whether it's in one already or not.
Yes, yes. So for Alice, this was very easy, but as you'll see for Bob, it won't be so trivial. Yes?
Alice
is not the same energy? Yes. So we assume that S is degenerate, so all levels initially have the same energy. So it's like having something here and just move this here. Didn't have to raise it and then. Okay. Yes?
So I understand that all the states have the same energy and you start and end in the same energy. So how is it obvious that you can always implement the unitary energy free? Is that obvious?
That I can?
That you can? Well, that I can't. You just said moving an object sideways doesn't cost any energy. Yeah, if I do that over and over, my arm's going to get tired. So
yes, okay, this is an idealization of.
No, but it may be an idealization, but I mean, what you're asserting is that the unitary can be done without any energy.
Yes, because it acts on this
so
energy degenerate subspace.
It's like negligible energy costs.
Yeah.
Wait,
so.
No.
Okay. So it's only because they're degenerate.
Yes, only because they're degenerate. So Bob can't really do the same because there's no reversible operation that allows him to take all of this here and then back without changing the energy. So what he can do is to use a heat bath at temperature T. So we're going to allow them to couple system temperature T. And we use the usual assumptions in thermodynamics, is that this path is very large and it always it when you couple it to the system, it always thermalizes the system without changing its own temperature. So this means that rho S, when it's in contact with the bath, will go to a Gibbs state. And for the non-physicists, this means only that levels with higher energy will become less likely to be occupied than levels with lower energy. And another thing we're going to allow them is to manipulate the Hamiltonian. The energy levels. So I'm going to allow them to, for instance, in a very crude example, if these are if this is a spin chain, right? I can, for instance, tune a magnetic field so that these states have higher energy. These states. And now this has costs. And what the costs are, if the level is empty, meaning the system is not in that state, then it's for free. It's like raising an empty bucket.
If the level is occupied, then it causes delta, like the variation of that.
I think it lost the mark.
Hello. Is it bad?
That's good.
Okay, good. Okay. When did I lose it? Okay, so if the level is empty, we can raise it for free. If it's occupied, we have to spend energy, delta epsilon, to raise it by delta epsilon. And if we lower it by delta epsilon, we gain energy, delta epsilon. Okay? We can discuss this in the end if you want.
So, what Bob will do is to couple the system to a heat bath, temperature T, and it's going to raise all levels but level 0. So as he raises the system, thermalizes it according to that, which means that these states become less likely to be occupied, and this instead zero becomes more likely to be occupied. And it does this very, very slowly into very high energies until in the end these states are suddenly to be empty and this is like occupation one. And then it decouples the system from the heat path. And then lowers this for free. Okay. So now the system is in the pure state, zero. And raising these levels as a cost, if we integrate it, it gives us. So for what raise the system was 15.2. And in general, for a classical observer, C, get that the work is always classical Landau principle. So what we did was to think about what an observer with a quantum memory can do to a system.
Sorry, why is it it's n and not n minus 1? I thought he boiled all the other qubits except 0.
He did. still gives in.
Oh, it still gives in?
It gives in. If you just integrate the energy needed.
Those aren't qubits, those are states.
Those are states.
Yes,
yes.
These are states. It keeps in.
Okay.
Okay. So in the quantum observer, we have some isochrones. Equals parallel with the system. We have a quantum memory that has some correlations with the system, like the classical law quantum correlations. But there is more than this system in the universe. There can be other systems that voices. Our computer has some information about an hard drive, it wants to format, it can also have information about UDV. So there can be these correlations. And we have to be careful about what we allow the observer to do to these correlations. Because assessing a quantum memory, since it's a quantum system, can in principle change it. And we say that we want to preserve all the correlations between Q and any other system. Why? For instance, suppose you erase this system S, but then later you want to erase the system Z. And if when you erase the system you destroy these correlations, then erasing this would be much more expensive in terms of work. So we allow the observer to use only this correlation between the system in Q, but he has to preserve all other correlations to all other systems. We do this by introducing a reference system. It purifies SMQ.
So this seems to be comparing apples and oranges, unless doing this in a classical sense has no effect.
Yes, yes, it has no effect because the classical memory can always do it in a way that read the memory, but it don't change the memory.
Right. So it's because of probably an automated entanglement or something that you get messed up. Is that?
It's false, and I won't get messed up by anyone.
Okay.
So in this case, like, Alice does this, and in the end she still has a piece of paper saying one. But this one is not related to the state of the system anymore, because the system is not state here. So in the same way, we allow them to destroy this correlation between S and Q, but just to keep the memory in the same state. Rho Q has to be preserved by the so to illustrate this, let's allow Quasimodo to have a memory formed by 2 bits. It still has Q1 that is fully entangled here, but now he has a memory Q2 that is as some sort of correlation to the reference system. So, Quasimodo does to a system in switch. It's 2 steps. In the first step, he extracts so we have here 10 qubits in space. Right? And what he does is just the opposite of what Bob did. So first, he sends all these qubits to very high energies. And then next is to each bar. And the lowest is levels very slowly. And as you lower them, they become more occupied. Right? Until in the end, this is fully mixed. And doing this, he extracts 2 and right. So let's see if he spoils something. Well, it turns out to be in, because in the end he has a fully mixed state in S in Q1, which means that this is fully mixed and this is fully mixed. But because this state was fully entangled, this part was already fully mixed before. So we still have row 1. So what he did was just to destroy these correlations here and get some work out. And now in step 2, he erases S just above this set. So he has to spend N. Two. And then in total, yeah, the negative work cost, so he raises the system and gets okay. Of course, he can't do it again because now we destroyed all these correlations here. And this is new, which is good. But now, obviously, the Quasimodo's example is very convenient for us because his correlations are very neatly presented in this form of full angle qubits. And usually, in general, the entanglement between the memory and the system can be more fuzzy. And what we showed was that in general.
So, can I stop for 1 second?
Yes.
I'm trying to figure out how this erases S.
So there are 2 steps here. One, he extracts work from S in Q1.
Yeah.
Leaves S in a fully mixed state. And he extracts 2N, because we have 2N qubits. And then, he does the same with object.
Oh,
S.
I see.
And he spends.
He spends happily, yeah.
He spends out what?
I'll purify that.
Huh?
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay. Now, we should let in general. Left this relation between work and the entropy with the bonus that now this can be negative. And that is approximately here because this is only for a thermodynamic limit where we erase the system many, many times, where it's many copies of the system. So this RD limit. And our result is a bit more ugly. Says that this work is sufficient to erase the system, and here this is the max entropy, smooth max entropy, so just an entropy measure that is more single shot than the normal entropy, which is more for average. And this keep us above the Ethiopia. What's the political? That's a procedure. Which is.
So in this case, the meaning of the equation is single shot, right?
So in this case, the meaning of the equation is single shot, and in this case, it's average. So when you consider the equation of many systems, it's converges to that.
So, I'm a bit, what's the meaning if he decides not to erase S?
That means that he extracted work from...
He extracted work from the system, but it's a fully mixed state, so he sort of lost. I mean, his memory
yes,
is lousy, right?
Yes. Well, it didn't change the reuse state of the memory. So the memory is still in the same state, but not the information it has added. It's not related to the system anymore. So it means that a classical observer can extract twice as much work from the system than a quantum. No, the other one.
Yeah.
Observer can extract twice as much work from the system because it can also use the memory.
No, I see the 2n and n result, but I'm just trying to understand.
What do you mean?
He can't go backwards once he's put it in the heat bath and gone
no.
down, right? So in some sense, that's already partial erasure, yet he's gained more. That's what I'm puzzled about. I mean, why bother
yes.
to erase?
Okay, no, we defined erasing, yes.
Well, I know how you defined it.
Because it means that now, if the system is erased, it can use it to others to do other operations there.
All right,
stuff.
So S can't
like
be used for other stuff.
Can't
that's true.
Be used because it's...
All right, that's true.
You want a blank piece of paper.
Yeah,
yes.
You want a...
But it's blank on S, not the memory.
Yes.
So it's,
sorry?
It's all about S, not the memory.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
all right.
S.
All right.
Yeah.
So, Lydia, this...
Yes.
So, like, obviously there's two terms in the error here, and as you take that,
oh, so this
is... Just take that epsilon to zero. This H max is going to get larger, right?
Yes.
Does it turn... I can't remember. Does it turn to some finite amount? Does it just turn to H? What does it go to as you take it?
It tends to H in the limit of many systems.
Oh, yeah, sure, I know that. But if you just
okay.
keep it, if you just hold it for the one shot and then try and make, you know, and you sort of...
Yeah, it tends to just H max, right?
In the limit, what as epsilon gets large,
I mean, you don't usually care about.
Oh no,
as epsilon gets
small.
Small.
What does H max?
I mean, then you get the non-smooth.
Yeah.
Then you get the non-smooth H max.
Is that what it is?
So
this
means that
yes.
we have a state.
So you have to
take.
And we minimize the mass entropy in like a whole.
And is that And is H max? Is H max always a finite quantity?
No, you can diverge in finite system for infinite dimension.
Oh no, I just mean even on because I know some of these.
I mean, H max zero is roughly the log of the size of the support. Of the...
Right.
So it's always and
so it's the finite.
And it is the conditional quantity also finite? Because sometimes these other conditional quantities can be infinite.
So what's epsilon doing? What's epsilon doing again when you draw that ball?
The maximum is the log of the dimension.
So this is a state of rho. We want to measure the entropy of rho, and that we allow an epsilon ball according to some distance.
Around rho.
So that,
and we minimize H mass.
Okay.
Right, so that kind of corresponds to just you don't know anything. You
yes.
sort of it's the same as if you don't know anything at all about your system. Is that right?
Which,
if you do the, if you go take the epsilon to zero.
No, that means you know exactly.
Yeah.
It means you know everything about it.
Well,
it means
you know the state.
No. I just mean
so
the quantity, the H-max.
So if this is like, is that the values of the diagonals of this imagings? So taking epsilon means that you can, if this sum up to epsilon, you can ignore them and take just the superlatives.
Yeah. Yeah.
So usually, if there's like a tail on this distribution, you ignore it, and just get it, and if not, then it comes in all. So it's like you will use no less.
I guess I was just thinking about what the kind of how bad how about this bound gets, depending on what you do.
If you don't depend on
the error, and if you want,
here,
if you, yeah.
If you allow a probability of error of 3%,
yeah.
Then this delta is approximately 20, I think.
Okay.
Which is like the cost in work.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
And I can just quickly show maybe out how many.
Well, you have to choose epsilon depending on delta.
Yes, you choose epsilon depending on delta.
Okay. It was I was not in a very well defined question. So.
Okay. And the way we prove it. That here's system S, and then Q, and whatever. And there can be some correlations between S and our memory, but they're not like nice, etc. But we show using decoupling results that we can always compress our information in a pure state. In a state X that is in SQ that has L qubits where L is size. So what we do is that we can always apply unitary here on S. That creates a fully entangled state between part of S and part of S and Q. And then we have this pure fully entangled state. And then we can extract work from here. And this gives us this much KT log T.
Are you saying that the S and Q are in a pure state?
No.
So there is
I'm
some
saying that. So they are not in a pure state.
Yeah.
Yes. But I can always create a small system here that is in a pure state.
And you can do that just by acting on one side?
Just by acting on one side.
Okay.
And yeah, the way we do it is that we decouple this little bit here from the rest of the universe, except the memory. And so it is decoupled. And it is in a fully mixed state, which means that it has to be fully entangled with something else, but only this part is left, so it has to be fully entangled with S and Q.
Okay. I mean, I don't see it, but I'll let you go. I mean, it's not necessary. You don't want.
Yes, and then.
So, excuse me.
Yes.
We don't allow interaction between S and Q.
What do you mean by interaction?
Is it in your assumption that any unitary you're allowed to perform should be on the system alone?
No, it's not in my assumption, but...
It turns out that it's not helpful, or?
It turns out that... So what... Remember that in the end, we want the state of Q to be the same as initially. We want Q and R to be the same as initially. So we don't really want to mess up here, so we don't want to apply unitaries. This part of the system. It turns out that it's sufficient to apply unitary.
You want to reduce the state of Q be the same?
I want to
reduce the state. Yeah.
This bit to be preserved.
But,
so
is it clear that there's no unitary which allows you to have large or pure entangled state
We have this low bound for the size of the system, and we don't have an upper bound yet. But you're very much sure that it's this. Maybe some difference in this delta, but we think. So if you have a pure state now we can extract it from here. And like this side will be fully mixed, and this side will be fully mixed. And in particular, this bit was before, so it don't really change the memory. And then we raise S and spend MKT log 2. to say to someone here. This work. Yeah, so this is all. So we found the thermodynamic interpretation of conditional entropies as they quantify the work as an observer as a very system. In particular, we see that an observer with a quantum memory can gain work to the general system, which is new, nice. Yeah, these applications. You know that when we use the system, we release heat to the environment. And this, and now a quantum observer, we show that it can actually cool the environment because it gains energy and effects from the environment. So this can provide new bounds in heat generation when you have like very small circuits. That's all.
So you basically got a quantum refrigerator of sorts, right?
This keeps us energy.
Well, you're taking heat from the environment or
yeah.
from some other system. I call that a refrigerator. So is there some bounds you can place on the maximal efficiency of this kind of refrigerator? Can it beat standard classical thermodynamic refrigerators?
Yeah, I can work on that,
yes.
I guess it could.
I mean, when you don't explain it, you don't explain how to set up the state. So in the refrigerator, you want to go round and round.
Round and round what?
Presumably. Like there's a cycle.
Because
well,
it needs engine. So yeah, we can't do it again.
Yeah,
so
I mean, you would have to
yeah.
quantify how much it costs to create your initial entangled state.
Well, but would that, why is that, does that cost more than what it would do to set up a classical refrigerator?
I don't know the answer to your question, but there are some recent papers by Sandy Popescu and co-workers about minimal examples of quantum fridges, which might shed some light on your question.
Sorry, Popescu?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And,
but the title is exactly on the efficiency of very small quantum refrigerators.
Sorry?
The title is exactly this, on the efficiency of a very small...
So somebody's already thought of
yeah.
quantum refrigerator, but still.
But
so
interesting to ask in this.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, it's some form of refrigeration. And, I'm not going to freeze my burgers in it, maybe, but it's there. The question is there.
Yes.
But it seems like all you're doing is just trading out the information that you have in terms of knowing that the system and memory are in a pure state. You're trading that
yes.
lack of entropy for, you're putting that into the heat bath, right? You're just using that to cool the heat bath.
Yes.
Effectively. So I mean, I guess what I'm, the point of me saying this is that it's no different than having a system that's cold, you know, sticking an ice cube in a hot room. That you're cooling the room with the ice cube. There's your ice cube, that psi. Is that the correct interpretation, or is there more to it than that?
Yeah, I guess that's an analogy.
Some sense, yeah. But if the ice cube is big, and it's an ice box, on an ice box.
I guess maybe this ice cube is colder than classical ice cubes.
But I don't think it is. I think that's what I'm
you
saying. That, no, because you've got, I mean, all you have, you have two n qubits, and you know exactly what state it is. You have maximum information about that. And so you're just trading that for, you're just putting that into the environment and cooling the environment, which you don't note because it's a bath. And so it doesn't change very much. Nevertheless, I can gain heat from the environment. I think what's new, though, is the interpretation of this entanglement as a quantum memory. Because here you have a situation where supposedly someone knows something about a system, even though when looked at from the outside, that piece of paper just has junk on it.
Yes.
Or a random outcome.
Yes.
Nevertheless, it always tells you what the system is.
Yeah.
Jerome
knew that,
yes.
You know, what did it say?
Yeah, I mean, this comes up the whole time in cryptography, right? When you
when you want to talk about how much knowledge you have about, like an eavesdropper wants to have knowledge about potentially Alison, what they're sending to Alice and Bob, and then you want to assume that they have a quantum memory in the most general case. And so in time and phase strategies are very important. Yeah, I mean, it's not. I guess it's not the first case where people have thought about quantifying memories mechanically.
I didn't mean that it was absolutely new the first time memories got discussed. I just meant that in the context of cooling, what you're doing is taking an ice cube in a hot room and reinterpreting the ice cube as being in a new sense where you split it into these two systems. You have a pure state where, nevertheless, each one is in a maximally mixed, has a maximally mixed marginal in their frequency. So, can you give an example of this? I'm trying to think. Like, if you have a single, like, imagine you have two qubits over here, and you have a bell pair in the top. You can mix up the bell pair such that this first qubit is in the same way.
You like
that's the split. Yep. So that's your bell pair. Now you can reverse that unitary on the left and mix up the two such that Q is now partially entangled with both of the other two qubits.
Okay, so like
right.
This in the beginning.
By a unitary, but just by changing bases.
By changing, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
so,
is that what you're talking about?
Yes, this is what I'm talking, the inverse of that. So we
right.
start in something like this,
uh-huh.
and we can move it to something like this.
Okay.
And then we start to look from this two.
Right, but that assumes that on the Q side, things are localized already.
What do you mean by localized?
Well, I can't spread out. So what I just said and what you just wrote by changing that bell pair to two dotted lines
mm-hmm.
cannot be done on the right-hand side by operations on the left.
Yes.
So you're assuming already.
No, I'm not assuming. I know I'm not assuming.
Okay, well, I believe you, but I don't see how. So what I mean is that what you're saying here is that you've got information in Q that knows about S, and then you're doing something over here that brings all of this to here.
Yes.
And what the only thing that I can so far see, which may just be lack of imagination, is that if it's already confined to this region on this side, then you can consolidate it on the left. But I don't see how you can do an operation over here and also consolidate information this way.
Well, but then here we just have to choose them. So when I represent these guys here that then we perform work in certain things,
mm-hmm.
well, this is a basis and we can always choose the basis in which we do this. So it is like, in some sense, we apply.
So physically nothing's happening.
Physically
to you,
nothing
right?
happens,
you're
just,
so
you're
reinterpreting.
Yes.
Are you talking about the process where you end up with both parties sharing something like a maximum entangled state? So number
yes.
of maximum entangled states.
Yeah, and then the rest are uncorrelated.
Right. So I mean, it's because this is like this state merging. So you have. So the idea is like if your Schmidt coefficients can be split up into a tensor product, something that's very uniform, and something that's whatever else, then it's just local unitaries to get that very uniform part localized on both sides.
Right, but what I'm talking about is that there should be a local unitary on the Q side as well.
I guess that's just implicit.
But it's just, so that's just...
But it can be done.
Right.
Yeah.
But you don't have to do it, it's just important that it's localized in S, I guess.
And the reason it's not important is because we only care about erasing S, is that the point? We don't really care about how the memory is being manipulated, we just want to erase that.
You even don't want to manipulate the memory.
What I'm trying to figure out is why you wrote down a U sub S and did not write down a U sub Q.
Because both U are just a change of bases, so it means that...
They're both just
a
change of bases.
So in some bases, the state looks like this. But you don't need really to perform that unitary.
I understand all of that. I've understood everything that's been said so far. What I'm trying to figure out is why a US has been written and a UQ has not. What's the motivation for doing that? What's the reason that everyone is saying UQ doesn't matter, US should be written down? Why? When they're both just changes of basis. Is there a reason?
You don't need to write down US.
We don't need to write down US either.
No. Yeah.
Of course,
it's
I mean...
In the
But it might be, I mean, it's sort of, seeing as we're talking about thermodynamic things, and it is at least sort of useful to just note the fact that you can indeed, like you said, I mean, what does this really mean? It means we want a certain actual number of particles in our system to be in the low entropy state globally, the maximum entangled state. We need to know which ones they are. I mean, that's going to be important, right?
Yes.
So that's why US needs to be actively done.
You'll need to do something on both sides, right? Like, just like in the state measure protocol.
Well, that's kind of what I'm thinking, that in general, to localize the entanglement to certain systems, then you're going to have to do something on both sides. So my question is, why did you say we only need to do something on the S side?
So wait, S is the one that you're going to raise the levels of?
No, I raise the levels.
Lower the levels of S and Q. Is my question clear?
Your question is clear.
Okay.
The answer is not clear, but
it. All right. My confusion is also clear.
All right. But I'm sure we're not cheating.
I'm not saying you're cheating. I'm just trying to figure out how it's not US tensor UQ, just local unitaries acting separately.
Yes, I mean in a way it is.
So it wouldn't matter if you did US and UQ. It wouldn't matter.
Probably not.
I've been just thinking about it.
It's just a change of basis.
Yeah,
so it's just
your
in your mind.
Sure.
Yes.
It's just, I guess, when you're thinking about physical systems, it's quite appealing to actually pick a basis which corresponds, for instance, to some local subdivision of your system into a cold part and a hot part, which does actually imply some structure to the basis you pick, because you want a basis for the cold part and a basis for the hot part.
But it seems like if you're going to have to actually change the energy levels, and then, well, dynamically, you know, raise them, and then you subsequently lower them after contact with the bath, then you're going to have to be in a particular basis.
Yes.
And because, as someone said, you have to do that as well. Okay, I would feel so much better if you had a use of Q up there. Ah, wonderful. Now I can. All right.
So
I totally agree. Then you can take a mix of entanglement and shove it all to a particular.
Yes. And I guess an Indian.
Right. Yes. Okay. Is there any other question? So, operationally speaking, is this a technology that you have to do operationally? Maybe it was his question. What he was asking to you, I mean, it sounded like basically it's entanglement concentration.
It basically contains geomatic compression as part of what we're doing here, and it's all in there. Because what you're doing is you're taking a state and you're turning it into a new state where a large part, some part of your system isn't just a known fixed state, which is like half of the maximum entangled state, and the other part is kind of the compressed.
Yeah, I think this is what people are doing in NMR, using the algorithmic cooling. So basically, they are implementing Schumacher compression. So I expect it's simple here.
Is there any other question? If not, let's thank Didi again. And well, before you leave,